Hey there, Kwajo here, and I understand that running your own Facebook ads can be quite complicated and intimidating, and yet at this point, you're not ready to hire out Facebook ad management. So, if this is you, I can teach you how to run your own Facebook ads, one-on-one, unlimited support over the next 28 days. We will have three Zoom calls, and in between those calls, you get all the support and all my strategies. I will audit your graphics, your ad copy, make sure that you're set up the way that's working best for my clients. We'll take care of all the analytics. I will coach you step by step how to troubleshoot ads, how to know when to scale, and how to read all the signs so that you're equipped to run successful lead magnet campaigns and profitable sales campaigns and registration campaigns for your launch or what have you. If you need this kind of support from me right now, then click the link in the show notes below. It's the art of online business forward slash call. I've been doing this all along, but now the offer is just focused on helping you run your successful ad campaign within the next 28 days, and the next five people get a pretty nice discount. All right, the link is in the show notes below. Back to the episode.
Welcome to the Art of Online Business podcast. My name is Rick Mulready, and I'm an online business coach, Facebook and Instagram ads expert, lifestyle entrepreneur, and I'm a total coffee snob as well. Each week, you're going to learn actionable strategies, mindsets, and tips that take the guesswork out of growing and scaling a profitable online business so that you can truly become an entrepreneur with impact. This podcast is your secret weapon for fast-tracking the growth of your online business. Let's do this. All right. What's up, my friend? Super excited to bring you this episode here today. And thank you so much for tuning in today. Super appreciate you for hanging out with me today, as always. Hope all's going well. So joining me on the show today, her name is Shannon Lutz. She got married in April of this year. So she's now Shannon Matson. And I got connected with Shannon through a mutual friend, Tiana Tai, who has been on the podcast here before. And so I was talking to Tiana. I said, hey, who is somebody who is just doing really cool things in their business? Such a great person, doing things for the right reason. And like without even hesitation, she's like, you got to have Shannon Lutz. I will introduce you, et cetera. And so I've been talking with Shannon for a little while now, and she is just a great person doing some really, really cool things in her business and seen a lot of success in 3 years now that she's been doing her online business. And she has a corporate marketing background that you're going to hear more about here as we get going into the interview. But what Shannon does is she has her business. She helps female entrepreneurs market their expertise and structure their business for scale. She focuses on things like Instagram, how to leverage Instagram to grow your business, how to launch, how to evergreen. And then she also talks about high ticket programs in your business. And we're going to dive into all of those different areas here with Shannon today. I have lots of questions when it comes to Instagram. We talk about, you know, who should be evergreening, who should be not evergreening, what is the key to having evergreen success. We talk about psychology of sales. We talk about what does a typical day look like for her. We start out the conversation talking about her coffee shop. Yes, coffee shop. I didn't know this. And this was the first thing before we hit record. And she was telling me about the coffee shop. And I was like, amazing. I don't know if you know this or not, but I am a complete coffee snob. And so, yeah, we start off this conversation talking about her coffee shop in Vegas. So we dive into all things online business here with a little sprinkle at the beginning of what it's like to own a coffee shop. So without further ado, let's dive into it with Shannon Matson. Shannon, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Good, Rick. I'm so excited to be here. I told you I was somersaulting when I got your invitation because I'm a big fan. So I'm very excited.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm pumped to have you on. And we were just chatting before I hit record here that you own a coffee shop.
Yes.
In Vegas. And it's not just like any coffee shop. It's like a great coffee shop, which is like, ooh, tell me more. So
yes.
Tell, like, let's just start right there. Okay.
Yes,
because everybody listening right now knows I'm a total coffee snob. What is this coffee heaven that you have in Vegas.
Yeah. Well said. It's called Bungalow Coffee, and it is, we call it more than a coffee shop because it's 2,500 square feet. This thing is pretty large for what you would normally imagine because it's all about co-working, not in your traditional co-working space set sense where you would go rent a space and all that. It's just come in and stay a while. So it's big, luxurious booths and all of the plugs you can imagine with the strong, we've got the strongest Wi-Fi package as well as the strongest caffeine. So it is just productivity.
It's a good combination.
Yes. And we know our patrons, we have a great time. So we encourage people to come stay a while, full food menu too. So they do, some people do literally have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with us. I'm so thrilled with it. It's like living the dream. It's only been open for a couple of months here in Vegas. So it's off to the races.
That's amazing. Well, so guys, we're not going to be talking about coffee shops, although I'm sure that Shannon and I could talk about coffee all day here on the episode, but I didn't even know that. So that's why I'm starting out with this. Cause I'm, as many of you guys know, like I am enamored with the whole coffee process and all that stuff. So, but anyway, coffee shop aside, if you're in Vegas, definitely check out Shannon's coffee shop there. Let people know what you do, who you are, what you do besides the coffee shop, and kind of how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Shannon Mattson. As of April 3rd, I got married. So that's new as
Congratulations.
Well. Congratulations. The first, thank you. And I'm the CEO founder of The Social Bungalow, which is an online education platform for entrepreneurs, but typically female entrepreneurs with online-based businesses. So we've got our coaches and our service pros. And it takes them through the lifetime journey of, I have a skill or an idea or a budding business. How do I do these 6 million things? All the way up till the point of, I have an offer suite, I have a strong following, I have a big vision, I can now expand into a second business or optimize my existing business. Mm-hmm. We aim to just be on that journey with someone through courses and through coaching support.
And what's your background coming into this? Because I want to dive into all the different elements of what you teach. Mm-hmm. But like what got you to where you are right now?
Yeah, I was a corporate marketer. I don't really know how to say it better than that, but sitting in the marketing department of different corporations, I worked my way up to director and then to VP of marketing in about 4 or 5 different companies over the span of 10 years. So I was definitely ladder hopping quite a bit and also salary hopping, but amassing a lot of experiences and a lot of different industries, which I think really helped to set me up for all of the niches of the business styles that come my way. Mm-hmm. But there was kind of that like quiet whisper of marketing can be remote. Do I want to go it alone? What's my big vision here? So I started working with mom and pop shops here in town. And I found that that was really fulfilling, but very stressful because they're extraordinarily tied to their $1 and they hand you that $1 and say, it better be $2 tomorrow.
Yeah.
So finding a way to create a more scalable business and a more profit heavy industry, i.e. the online space, is kind of where I found the shiny corner of the internet and went full steam ahead.
I love it. And you're in year 3, right? Mm-hmm. Is 2021 year 3?
Yep. Well, yes, it is. I guess we could call it that, but I'm in my 3rd year.
Gotcha. Okay. And one of the questions I had for you as we were DMing on Instagram was, wait, it seems like you have a lot of offers. Like, what does that look like? Because this is something that I talk a lot about here on the show and also with my students is like, all right, let's focus on one first before we start having shiny object and, you know, going in all directions. But you've really made this, as you mentioned, like your product suite really kind of flow. I mean, I don't want to say effortlessly, but that's what it looks like when you go to your site. You know, it everything has its place for where somebody is in their business. Can you talk a little bit about that? You know, how you've created your product suite.
Mm-hmm. First disclaimer, FOLO, fear of limited options. Don't let it get you. You don't need 6 million things if you're listening to this. It's just how I've structured it. So I started in year 1 with doing done for you outsource marketing. That's what I knew. So it's kind of your director of marketing for your business, obviously not very scalable. So that turned into coaching where I was more of a strategy house, party of one. And that offer through the first year, I did not have any courses. It was exclusively my time for dollars, but it really gave me a lot of clarity through that action and that deep work to where I'd created tons of resources and templates for clients that were really paramount in their success. And I was able to boil that down into what my first offer was, which is 5-figure Instagram, which is all things using Instagram to build relationships and convert. Such a powerful app. But through that, I got a little smart and I extracted one section and I made a mini course so that it's an upsell and a downsell. So one, the mini course is all things content and captions. And then the master program is everything else. So you kind of need one to have the other, and that increased my purchase amount at cart.
Smart. And
yeah, that really was great as an entry point from a price perspective. They're both great, large offers. They're not teensy tiny, but I was able to price them moderate and cast a wide net. And through that process, I had beginners, intermediates, and advanced individuals in this one program because it was specialty focused. But I found that there were a lot of different needs from the perspective of lifetime value for them to ascend and keep buying from me. Mm-hmm. So I zoomed in on the beginner and said, what's the next thing you need from here? What would you do after you've nailed Instagram? And they said, I'm ready to launch my own offer just like you did. So I created Live Launch Academy. And then those people said, I want to also not just launch a course, but sell my high ticket. So I made High Ticket Sales System. And those people said, I want an evergreen. So we made the evergreen program. So it's been a really beautiful ascension build of building for my audience versus guessing what they're going to need, which is how I teach it.
Yeah.
And with the different niche specific focuses, it allows for taking somebody from the very beginning up to the advanced perspective, but not in the through the lens of, let's actually build your business and build your offer. It's much more, let's actually launch it. Let's actually figure out Instagram so that there's not competition.
Yeah. So what would you say to, so when it comes to Instagram, selfishly speaking, I'm going to ask you this question. And I have a lot of questions to ask you around Instagram, but I want to get into sort of that ascension, if you will. Now, so many people have questions around Instagram, like they're not getting traction with it. They understand there's value there because they keep hearing everybody talk about it, but yet they're frustrated at their lack of traction with Instagram. So what would you say to somebody who is in that place? I'm raising my hands, number one, with me. What would you say to that person who is just, putting the time, putting the effort in, and they feel like they have to show up every day and et cetera, like all this stuff, but yet not seeing the results?
Mm-hmm. It's a balancing act between your content output and your giving in order to get on other people's accounts. And typically I find somebody's full focus on content or full focus on engagement, and they don't balance the two. So I say, let's start by establishing a content cadence for Instagram, so you have some boundaries to work within and you don't constantly feel like you're letting yourself down by not producing or showing up enough. Let's say that's 3 posts per week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Monday and Friday are educational. Wednesday's a reel. So you're getting that reach. Awesome. You're then on your stories 5 days a week, but only on 2 of those days do you give valuable trainings. So you're on for more time. Mm-hmm. This is now on your calendar. You're able to batch it and pre-record and do all the things so that you feel set up and supported. And then taking the time to create yourself a similar system for engagement. So maybe that is every day I'm finding 10 new accounts that fall within my ideal client avatar, and I'm liking photos, I'm responding to their story, because then we're in the DMs, and I'm following them. I don't need to be shy. I can follow people. And if they're not a good fit and we don't connect, I can unfollow later. It's not the follow and follow game. It's just making a good decision for your consumption and noting who those people are on a spreadsheet, and then going back and loving on them continually. So that you're not only having an ICA convo and warming them up in temperature to the point of purchase or opting in for your free resource, you're also getting that follow back, and you're getting that law of reciprocity comments on your post in response to your story, which tells Instagram, this account provides value. Let me continue suggesting. So it's this big snowball that we have to push down the mountain to allow it to pick up the momentum. But when you give in order to get, it makes a world of difference.
So somebody listening, myself included, hears that and they're like, that's a lot. It sounds like a lot of time. And, somebody might be like, that's a lot of effort and a lot of time that I just don't have, nor do I want to put that much into it. How much time are we talking here? You mentioned batching. Is this like a once a month thing and then showing up on stories, et cetera, each day? What does that look like?
Yeah, I will write out my content topics and write the captions, link it up with photos, and schedule it in one, let's call it a Sunday, one like 3-4 hour time block. And that's good for the next month. Most people don't think to batch their stories where they sit down, literally if you're a lady, do your hair and makeup that one day, swap out 5 different shirts and film your mini trainings for the month and call it a good day, call it a good month. And from there, in real time, when you want to infuse things, then it's more organic and it feels good. And you can talk about what's going on in your life or in your community, but you're already set up and it's all scheduled. I have a lead tracking community nurture spreadsheet where the latter part is then tackled with 20 accounts per day of finding them and loving on them. And when you get used to it, it takes you about an hour a day, Monday to Friday. So 4 hours on a Sunday for the month and 5 hours per week. If you want to dedicate that much to get the traction, that's what you'd be looking at.
So I know that you often talk about like the number of followers is not like, it's just that it's just, it's a metric, right? Of, but yet there's more important things to be looking at as a result of the effort that you're putting into to Instagram. What are some of those things that somebody, you know, like let me ask you a different way. One of the questions that came up recently in my accelerator group was, I'm trying to give my social media manager KPIs for and metrics to be shooting for when it comes to Instagram. Like, what is that? What, you know, what do you guys do when it comes to this? What would you say to that type of question?
It's all about the action being taken. If you have great viewership, that's on your stories, for example, that's great because you know that people are paying attention and it's your opportunity to lob them a softball of your freebie or a call to direct message you before you're asking for a purchase. That's an awesome place to be in. But if we even take away the eyeballs and we just look at the people taking action, i.e. they're clicking back over to your profile, they're clicking the URL, they're leaving a comment, they're asking thoughtful questions, that's the power of what we want to look at. So algorithm-wise, if we look at your post, you want to look at your likes, your comments, your saves, and your shares. Those are things that are just going to give you a trending metric on how your content's performing so you can fan the flame of the topics that went over like gangbusters with your audience in future months. As far as your stories go, we want to look at the amount of people who responded or went to your profile while looking at your story that inspired them and they went and they clicked that link in your bio.
Gotcha. Okay. That makes sense. Now with that, let's talk about Reels.
Yes.
I literally, when we're recording this the other day, like 3 days ago, I recorded my first Reel. It was awful, but I was like, oh, I kind of get it. And then in full transparency, I recorded the video and then my wife made it. Because she gets it. And she was like, explain it to me. And she was like, you know what we're actually creating here is way more complicated than what you need to do. But number one, where do Reels fit into the overall strategy? What type of content generally does well with Reels? And how do we make it, again, how do we just sort of streamline it and make it as simple and easy as possible in the least amount of time possible?
Mm-hmm. Instagram awards people for using their new features. So they're giving a lot of attention to Reels, even though it's been out for some time, it's still giving you the most reach, the most eyeballs, and that's calling in new followers by producing the same piece of content you would have put into post form or into written terms. Mm. So getting on, it takes less than 30 seconds. That's all you've got. Some of us are moving up to 60 seconds. That's being dripped out. And taking the time to do that is very helpful for finding eyeballs. The type of content that you want to do is either humorous because it's quick consumption style. TikTok has definitely changed us to where we want to see that quick hit of something engaging so I can bond with the person and really like this brand, which is Instagram as a whole. Even if you're a company or an agency and you're not a personal brand, people still want to know that this is a place that's going to get them and it's going to show up for them. So showing that in humorous ways by doing a voiceover or making a common joke. Like I had my best performing reel is me wrapped in a blanket, hopping around the house, saying, I have a ton of work to do, but I'm avoiding it because I'm going to go watch my Instagram story for the 17th time in a row. And that one, like everybody cracks up, like, it's me. Do you have a camera in my house? I feel seen. And that spurred up a ton of conversations while that productivity was able to go in a good direction. But then also little tidbits of your education before you get cut off. So if you have one powerful idea or tactic, or if you have a little bit of a tech hack for that day that somebody's like, whoa, this blew my mind. Thank you. And I want to rewatch it 5 times, getting your views up, therefore getting it served in the algorithm more. Anything that's tiny and quick and funny or helpful is going to go over well.
I love that. So with what you just described brings up, and I prop up my chair real quick right here, because this is something that I think about a lot. What would you say to somebody? And I've heard this question a lot too, is like, no one cares what, like, as far as like, if it's like personal, right? No one cares when like about what I want to post or what I'm going to post when it's a personal thing. What would you say to that person?
I would say it's wrong that they do care. And even if they haven't reached out to you and said, this story that you shared was the thing that made the difference between me hiring you or somebody else, it more so comes down to the psychology of storytelling. There's a study that was done where they had a bunch of those little neuron sensors on brains, and they said the same sentence about the weather to these test subjects in three different ways. The first way was in a factual data specific way. The humidity percentage is this, and the sun is at this point in the sky. And the response from the brain on the scan was very dismal. Then they said it in a conversational way, like, hey, did you hear it's nice outside today? Bop, bop. Was a little bit more interesting on the neuron reaction. And then the third way, they told a story about how they walked outside today and the sun hit their face. And then they did this and then they did that. And the brain lit up like a Christmas tree because they were able to grasp it in so much more detail and see it in that color. So what you're doing through the lens of your personal story, if you can relate it back to your work or why you're here or how you serve someone, that is going to allow for a deeper level of attention, understanding, and retention so that somebody has you having a stake in the ground in their brain as the go-to thought leader on this topic.
Gotcha. I love it. It makes total sense, right? Like storytelling, everyone, you know, so many people can like oftentimes when we're writing emails, some of the best emails that either open rate or click rate are the ones and comments back, right? Replies are the ones where we tell stories, especially when we're being vulnerable and being authentic and open about it.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that it would be like that too for Instagram and for stories. Now let's talk about selling in the DMs, like in Instagram DMs. There's this sense of like people have like, I don't want to come across salesy or I don't want to seem salesy. How does one go about, if you will, you know, taking that conversation from sort of a friendly, if you will, DM conversation to making an offer or asking that, you know, what does that look like? And how do you recommend that people go about that?
Mm-hmm. The commonly what you'll hear is people say like, this is how to go from relationship building into closing the sale. And I find that transition to be awkward and it's very hard to execute if you're not a master salesperson. So what I say is if you've already been friend zoned with someone, it's going to be weird for you to come out like a shot in the night to say bye from me. What you want to do to pivot this, if you think they're a perfect lead, is for you to start putting out content that you're directing them towards. So you might put up a great training and say, hey, our conversation yesterday really inspired me to put up today's mini training. Go check it out. It's up on stories now. Now this person is getting spoken to from that authority perspective. And maybe you sandwich that with some social proof at the beginning with results you've gotten clients. And then at the end, you talk about how your offer can support people through this. And you're saying that to the public, but this person's now watching it. Another thing that you can do is send them one of their own posts in that direct message conversation. So you go over to their profile, you read through some of their posts, you find one that you can speak to, you send it to them and say, this was such a quality piece of content. Why did you feel this? How did you feel that? Or let's say you're somebody who is a social media manager. Pardon me, but a couple quick tips that might be great is if you put a call to action in this and we've been chatting and you've been on my mind. So I had an idea. And it's this way of starting to implement your authority into the friendship zone so that they start to respect what it is that you're an expert at. And also noting that we are, as coaches and service pros, well, as coaches, we're somebody's guide. It does not mean that we are necessarily above them. It's that we have a specific set of skills that can support them, but they have a specific set of skills that could support us too. And maybe down the road in a different chapter of life, you'd be hiring them. So it's not so much I need to separate myself from being your friend and completely go into I'm your boss mode. It's I need to reveal my expertise to you. So you see the need and you see me as a go-to person.
Gotcha. I thought you were going to go with a Liam Neeson quote there. I have a specific set of skills.
I looked at you a little bit and I didn't see a big reaction. So I was like, all right, keep going.
Well, it's because you kept going. I didn't jump in there, but yes, my brain immediately went to that. I love it. I love that we have a Liam Neeson quote from a movie in a podcast episode. I think this is a first. So before we jump into another topic here, you mentioned that this was sort of the start of your journey in the business as far as, you know, as far as like product sales, if you will, course sales, starting with Instagram and then moving into launching. Now, a lot of people don't have the patience to only build an audience organically, right? Because I talk a lot about ads. We also talk about organic and like podcasts and YouTube, whatever. But a lot of people don't want to like put in the time and play the long game when it comes to building their audience. And so with what you teach in your business, where does that, does it really fit or does it sit in the beginning, if you will, in someone's, you know, building their business? Or is it, get this down first and then it just sort of, you know, sits across everything you're doing in the business. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. I would say it's more the last, because having a small audience is a luxury. You can know everybody's coffee order and husband's name and dog's name and plant's name. And you can really go deep with these people, showing your expertise and then having them so primed to buy / making the offers for them, like we talked about earlier. So if you only have 500, 1,000, 2,000 followers and you know them intimately and they are ideal clients, you didn't just pack in with following, you know, you have a specific service that's going to help a business person and you're following influencers, it's not going to be a best fit. But if they are best fit, great. And so with that, I teach a 60-day ramp up period from the first post that pivots the conversation towards this is the offer for you. And then the last post, which is opening the cart. There are all these little timing pieces, which we can talk about, but that need to happen in the 60-day ramp up to get somebody from, I know I have a problem. Now I know you're the solution. And now I'm banging down the door for the solution. Please open the cart. I'm going to buy. And when you do it in this strategic kind of subliminally pivoty way, it allows your 2,000 person audience to have 1,000 of them ready to buy. Now, obviously 50% conversion on a live launch is fabulous, but I'm not talking about a long con. I'm talking about 2 months off of the audience you've already been loving on, which sort of circles back to the time it takes to nurture people. But if you've done that over 6 months and then you take 60 days to ramp up and then you come into an amazing live launch, which gives you an epic cash infusion.
Yeah.
Wasn't that worth it?
Yeah, for sure. What you just described is incorporating a very intentional strategy in your pre-launch, you know, your runway, if you will, into your live launch in Instagram.
Yes.
I love it. So let's just say someone's launching, they're doing well with their sales. They've launched a few times and they've seen success. Everybody wants to go to Evergreen right off the bat, you know, because they think like, well, yeah, I want to sit on the beach and I want to have dollars rain down on me and, you know, be sipping my favorite drink and money just flowing into the bank. Which we all want that, right? But let's talk about evergreening because this is something that you teach. What is your philosophy on evergreening it? What does it look like? Who should be doing it? Who do you feel like should not be doing it, et cetera?
Yes. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir a little bit with the way that your podcast is structured. And if they listen to any episodes, they know like we need some steps prior to going to evergreen / evergreen is not a set it and forget it business model. You are regularly updating it, looking at what's working, tweaking things, adding to it. So traditional blanket answer, I say, is at minimum live launch that one offer 2 times prior to even considering evergreen, but ideally a little bit more. Your live launch is always, it's time intensive to have that real time presence, but the cash that you make is much higher traditionally because of that combusted, you're like a little Instapot with that pressure cooker releasing, and you're able to bank in on the human nature of FOMO in an integrist way where you do truly have urgency and scarcity. And it's not just based off of like a 25% discount. It's only available this week. So live launching is always going to give you a little bit more money and it's going to give you a ton of data about what's working, what's not. And it allows for you to go deep by impacting this new cohort and really going into delivery mode with them because the cart's closed, nobody else is coming in versus you regularly, daily welcoming in new students who have tech issues and questions. And then you're updating this funnel and you're pouring more ads towards it. And it's a slow drip on the money. And there's pros and cons on both, but we need to work up to the point of having an optimized evergreen funnel for this offer because all of our pieces have worked to say, this email converted, these three didn't seem to, I need to tweak them. This ad converted, these three didn't, you know, have any attention. I need to tweak them. And you can only figure that out through the effort of live launching. That's some of your best data.
So somebody's live launched a couple of times. They've seen some success. They've looked at like what worked, what didn't work. Okay, we need to optimize this or that. And they're like, okay, I want to evergreen this. I want to give it a go. But then they don't see the same level of results that they were getting in the live launch. So what would you say to that person who is just, you know, frustrated because wait, I want this to go on evergreen. I want just money, you know, pouring in every day or every week, but yet it's work. Like you said, it's not a set it and forget it. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that person?
The conversion rate that you're going to see in an evergreen funnel is going to be lower week over week than it was in that one combusting week for the live launch. So setting yourself up to know that, so your expectation is set and you're not disappointed, is key out of the gate. Second, I would say that understanding that the live launch was a warm sales process, even if you weren't doing sales calls, mm-hmm. you were showing up every day for people. They were seeing your face. They were attending the bonus masterclass, whatever you had going. The evergreen sales process is colder. It's typically done through the process of emails being detonated in an automated funnel. They're getting a coupon code presented. They're watching replays of masterclasses. There isn't any access to you directly. Try as we might to make this as optimized as possible. So mm-hmm. it lowers our conversion percent regardless, which then says, okay, is the funnel high performing? Let's say that you look at your email sequence and you find that email number 5 has the lowest open rates of any of them. That gives you the opportunity to say, is it coming too quickly on the heels of email 4? Did they not have time to open it? So it was getting deleted. Was the content too long, too drawn out? Was my subject line not there? You tweak email 5. Now it's better performing. You go from an 8% conversion rate to a 9% conversion rate. You have all these opportunities to continue finessing it. Mm-hmm. And once it's at that point that it's performing, you know, you can turn your paid ads on and point more traffic. If $1 is turning into $3, $2 can turn into $5. And it allows for you to keep the leads going, and your organic efforts are going to support it as well. So to the person who says, well, I wanted this and now I want that. And should I go back to live launching? Live launching is never a bad idea. But if you've set up your evergreen funnel, we have, let's call it a 6-month opportunity to optimize it to where you want to be.
Yeah. And guys, what Shannon just said is super key here. It's like, I hear so many people, it's like, they don't want to wait 6 months, right? They just want, like, I want to turn the evergreen on. And within 3 weeks, this better be making money. This better be profitable. And you know what Shannon's talking about here, guys, is like, it takes work. We have to optimize. I talk about all the time here on the show, is we have to be looking at the data, optimizing what's working, what's not working. Okay, let's test this to see if it affects the results, et cetera. And again, this all comes down to you're playing the long game of the business. And you know, you have to be willing to be, you know, I talk all the time about mindset. You got to be willing to be patient and see things through. And that is what's going to help you be more successful when you're patient, looking at the numbers, playing the long game, et cetera. Now, Shannon, you mentioned the high ticket sales, because you mentioned, like, you know, getting on sales calls, et cetera. What is your high ticket selling, you know, methodology, if you will, framework? What does that look like for you?
Typically, in the way that I teach people via this Ascension model of programs, is I prefer for them to make a large cash infusion through the live launch prior to zooming into their high ticket, because you are going to hit a time for dollars ceiling. There are only so many hours and there's only so many of you. So if we are coursifying some of our best brilliant stuff into a specialist program, we live launch, we evergreen it, that's working for us fabulous. We don't stop serving somebody at a super high level. If they have the funds, if they've ascended through our ladder and they're really just ready for that, they're a more advanced person. So now that we have this higher ticket, how do we sell from service, but also sell in a way that supports the person that they're truly made for this offer? So for example, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Shannon, I want to do the all-in week VIP experience where we go deep into my systems and my launch plan and all of that, and they haven't purchased any of the courses from me, I will kindly pivot them back to those programs to say, this is going to do you a better service, so you understand all of my methodologies. It's going to cost less. You're going to have 40 lessons worth of live launch strategy. Do that, then come to me for optimization, because I want to make sure I'm really supporting you on this journey. So when you have courses plus high ticket, it allows for you to sell to the advanced individuals who bought everything from you and speak your same language and go from there. That's not always something you can do right now if you don't have programs out in the world and you just need to sell your high ticket. So coming back to the main way in which I will teach this with someone is to operate from relationship. If you are selling a one-on-one type service where this person's going to go on a journey with you, get to know the individual, get to know their needs, and don't be shy to put together a little bit of a custom proposal, so to speak. Save yourself time. Don't get a ton of overhead. But I see a lot of times people say, I don't want to do sales calls and I don't want custom proposals. They take too long. And instead, what if we said it's a luxury to spend 20 minutes with someone in order to make thousands of dollars from someone I met over the internet? I mean, let's adjust the frame. And then from there to also say, I don't want to put together, you know, a full custom package. I want them to fit into one of my existing packages. Absolutely. You've already done all your profit margins there. But for you to reveal this to the person in a way that says, so your unique needs are this, and this program will help you uniquely because, and here's a 5-minute win that we're going to get in the first month. And here's the 5-mile win we're going to walk away with in 90 days from now. And this paints a picture for someone to see themselves in the scene of your offer versus you coming at them so close to the offer, they can't totally grasp it. And you wonder what's wrong with them. Why don't they get it? It's because it's not catered towards them.
Another thing I want to point out here, guys, what Shannon's saying, this, it's not, nothing is salesy. This is like listening to the person who is either an existing customer asking for what's next, what can I, you know, how else can we work together? Or somebody who's coming right in and saying, hey, I want this, but yet maybe they're not, you know, maybe from a CEO perspective, we need to loop them back around, just like Shannon just said, to whatever else makes sense in your business first before they get to that. Nothing is selling. This is just helping and customizing a solution for, or maybe the discussion, maybe the solution for them, yeah. Not being salesy here.
Yeah, so, customizing the discussion. That's well said.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, one thing I want to talk to you about is the whole psychology of sales, because I know this is something that really is really fascinating for you. And writing copy and how all this works together. Like one of the first questions I asked you before we started recording was like, who writes your copy? Do you write your copy? Because it's brilliant. And I look at it and you're speaking exactly to the person that you want to attract. Like you understand who you serve and how you serve them and how to speak to them. Talk about that psychology a little bit.
Thanks. It's the biggest compliment in the world. I'm like obsessed with meticulously picking every word in my copy. So thank you. Really understanding the persona and the current mindset of the individual and doing market research to get to the brass tacks of where they're at. So you can write to their heart and writing more to symptoms versus cause. A lot of times people who are experts know the actual problem the person's facing. And we write too advanced for their understanding when really they're in the pain of it or they're seeking the pleasure of it. And we're writing too scientific or there's not enough heart. And so with that, I always talk about a nesting doll style approach where you start with the broad topic of what you want to impart here. And then if you take off that first layer and say, okay, well, where would they be one step prior or what's one level deeper? And you keep going until you get to this niche specific example where you're wondering if it's too niche and it's not going to relate. And that's where you want to be. And you can do this through, let's say someone says, I don't want to go to the gym and you're a health and wellness expert. And part of your programming is that you make a workout routine for them to go to the gym. And then in that process, they just tell you don't want to go to the gym. So your sales page said, so are you hating the gym? And more so if you said, let's just remove all boxes. This is if you had all the money in the world, we're liberating you. What would you do? It's that question. And they say, okay, well, if I wasn't afraid of the gym or I didn't want to not go to the gym, I would go and I'd confidently walk over to the machine. Okay, when you walk over that machine, what do you do at that point? I immediately, you know, bang out my reps and then I do this and I do that. And you get to this point where someone talks about their 150% perfect version. And that's where you get to write from to say, hey, wouldn't you love to walk into the gym extraordinarily confident, go over to the machines, bang out your reps, not hide on the treadmill, not spend too much time in the bath. And this person's like, are you a mind reader? That's exactly how I feel. Yeah. And it's through the process of deeply knowing the heart of the matter and some of those fears to then write through.
I love that. How do you recommend somebody learn those types of things that you talked about? You talked about the research process. Somebody who thinks they have the understanding and knowledge of what you just mentioned, but when it really comes down to it, they really don't. So how does one improve that? Because this is it right here. Guys, this is the key. This is the foundation of your business. This is being able to speak and understand your target customer so that you can provide solutions for them. And that what Shannon just said there at the very end was like, you want them saying, oh my God, are they in my brain? Like they understand me. So what are some ways that people can get to that point as far as understanding the level of those things that you're talking about of their perfect customer?
Yeah, it's practice and it's knowing the person. And so whatever that means for you, if you want to practice with your posts and start to How can I make tomorrow's post a little more niche specific? How can I come up with an example that seems too particular to one individual person and play around with it? But getting to know these people and having conversations is what's going to set you up for success. And somebody will, when you just start riffing, which is the beauty of also getting to know each other in the DMs, and they're voice messaging and they say something off the cuff that's hysterical and exactly how everybody feels about it, asking them, can I ask you about that in a little more detail, or putting it on a note on your phone so you have all these anecdotes to work with, that's going to make your copy engaging so that somebody can, they just sentence to sentence, keep spilling to the next one without starting to skim because they're so seen in the process. Mm-hmm. But how do you suddenly mind read an entire person? It's through the process of getting to know several different people.
Yeah. And another great way to leverage your DMs and Instagram as you're having conversations, looking at what they're saying, what are they feeling, grabbing that the language that they're using so that you can leverage that in your copy.
Yes.
What does your, I'm really curious, because you talk about, you know, VIP experiences, et cetera. How does Shannon leverage her time in your business?
Ooh. Well, I'm very big on reframing for entrepreneurs that if you don't have an e-com business, there's no physical product, your overhead is your time. If we take our expenses out, like our softwares and even paying our coaches, and we just look at our time, how much time is it taking you to run this one program? How many hours does it take? Do we understand what our hourly rate would be? How do we add a profit margin to that? And I go through this with my clients to get them to the point of realizing whether or not an offer is basically making them negative, which it usually is, or just making them break even, and then how we leverage that further. So for myself, I toggle time track everything that I do when it has to do with a customer or with a client so that I understand exactly what went into this and see if I'm getting my own scope creep. I'm not billing them in hindsight, but I'm understanding I got my boundaries blurred, which happens naturally after you're super strict and then four clients later, it's blurry. My boundaries blurred and I need you for the next client to rein it in. Don't over deliver. Don't over promise. This is what they're buying. This is what you need to facilitate with excellence. And I just try to keep it sharp and lean. And I do the exact same thing with my team. They toggle time track themselves. And at the end of every month, I look at any one department where they spent more time than they spent the previous month or more time than is expected of them, ask what went down, see how we can pivot that. And a lot of times what happens is it's just a conversation and then they button it up, but they might say, this thing has fallen into my drudgeries and I hate doing it now. And so I just like takes me forever and procrastinate it. And it ends up being something another team member loves to do or has no issue with. And we can give it to them and we move around our happiness factors and make sure that everybody's staying efficient.
Nice. Now you mentioned your team there. Where do your values and your business values come into play within your team and within your business culture, if you will?
Yeah. Our number one core value is operate from radical care. And we do that with the clients, with the captions, with the copy, with the team, everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I will even in my brain recite, stay present in every conversation with someone because I want to go deep with them. And I find that if I focus in, we can get so much more done faster and I can support them in their dreams as well. So we have big conversations about what they ultimately want to do. Is it staying with this company and rising in the ranks? Is it, you know, going off and chasing their own dream and understanding that? So it's an open dialogue and I'm not bamboozled if somebody gives a 2-week notice and making sure that everything along the way of them accomplishing what they ultimately want is deeply rooted in that radical care so that they are supported. But we do have, you know, our boundaries. So I can radically care about you and still say that you're not approved for that extra time off because it doesn't fall within this. But we just regularly have conversations. And that's our question too. Somebody comes to us with a pickle, they want a refund, but they don't fall within the time zone. And based on their story and based on our availability, how can we operate from radical care, but still respect our boundaries?
Yeah. And then how has that evolved? Because this is something that we're going through that I'm bringing up in my business and going through in my business where the values are expanding. How has that evolved for you in your business? And now, you know, 3 years now.
Yeah, it's definitely, first it was very much so rooted in the wow factor to facilitate that for clients. And it was very client focused. And you find that if the internal culture, it starts at home, isn't optimized, for lack of a better term, then it's very hard to show up 110% for your customers. And the thing that's really shape-shifted us the most is the process of the coffee shop, because that I have many more employees on that side and they are typically younger. They're getting paid less. This isn't as much of a career. So there's a little bit more of a corporate legal protocol on that. But we have the same radical care conversation with them in their interviews, and we want to champion their side hobbies, their schooling, their success. So that has definitely shifted more into culture fit first. I can teach you coffee. I can't teach you radical care, so to speak, about one another, about yourself, and about your customer, and even the planet at large. I know that's a big sweeping statement, but we even say that on the coffee shop website, is how can we be innovative and champion new and untraditional ideas together? So we are regularly having a team meeting that's saying, what's gotten wonky? How do we pull it back to our core? And the process of having 8 people over there and 3 people over here is that infuses so much on this side where we are a little bit more intimate and career oriented.
Yeah. So going back to leveraging your time, I know this, people are always fascinated by this. What does a day look like for you? What's, let's take a typical day. You got a coffee shop, you've got this business here, you got a team, you're not married, like self-care. Like, what does a typical day look like for you?
Yes. A typical day is I'm up, make coffee, and I actually go right back to my laptop or right to my phone. And I know that's like the biggest poo-poo thing in morning routine culture, but I find more ease and peace through knowing that nothing's on fire versus going in through a 2-hour yoga meditation. So I get right to work, and I also have my highest cognitive energy at the top of the day. And I think that's important to know, is when are you going to be able to have the most clarity? When are your neurons on top of the world? So I knock out some writing. I answer some hard questions that I couldn't get to the last night because my brain wasn't working. Do that, get up, do a workout, get ready, get to the coffee shop, check in down there. And then we have offices above. So I go up to the office and I do calls if it's a call day, which I do have different days for different clients or lack thereof. And we head home by 3:30 to beat the traffic. I will make dinner, do the thing, and then take the dogs on the walk and post up for another hour or so to finish out the day and start all back over. That's pretty median average day.
5 days a week?
Yeah.
Nice. What is one thing, as we start to wrap up here, what's one thing that we haven't talked about today that you think is just, you know, looking at the scope of this conversation, we've talked about all different types of things here. What is something that you're seeing in your business right now that is coming up with your students a lot that you feel like, you know what, this needs to, or this is really helping, whether it's yourself or sort of commonly asked or commonly seen challenges in people's businesses? What's coming up and how is that, what's the solution look like?
Yeah. A big conversation right now is saturation, and that they feel there are just so many people doing what they do. And I guess that's not a new conversation, but it feels amped up because COVID caused a lot of people to start working from home, which is great that our industry is growing with online-based businesses, but it's also making, let's say, a business coach feel like they're just a copy paste of everybody on the internet, or that people are stealing from them, or that they're being too influenced by the content they're consuming and just hitting creativity ruts. What do we do? How do we break out of this? And then from that, a lot of the conversation becomes, well, produce more. Like if they're doing one, you do 3. And then that's exhausting. So how do we keep up with the rat race? And I say that when you know your unique value so deeply, and that can be, it's not necessarily ethereal, like your little X factor. It's truly what's unique about the way that you serve this student that's different from how your quote unquote competitor does. Mm-hmm. When you know that and you stand in it, and then you peel back layers to get even more detailed, you operate from a level of mastery that breaks through the noise, and you're able to stay in your own lane and expand that lane as you go while keeping your same content cadence and that same community nurture that we talked about earlier. You don't need to bend over backwards in order to cut through the noise. You just need to be so specifically you.
Yeah.
And also two other mindset reframes. The first one is that just as you're potentially not for everybody, and then that hurts and it scares you that not everybody's going to buy from you, your competitor is not for everybody too. And if you aren't standing there so boldly saying, this is who I am, this is who I'm for, they can't find you. You're in the business of serving people who want to be found. You don't need to knock on doors and sell vacuums to people who already have 3 of them. They need you desperately. So put yourself out there boldly and it will happen. You don't need to generate the traffic. The traffic already exists. You just need to stand in front of it. And then the other thing, I heard this said by David Meltzer on a podcast, is that for those A-type overachievers, guilty, it's so hard to do personal life self-care stuff sometimes when you have this big looming to-do list.
Yeah.
And instead, he thinks about everything he does in life as activity, and some of it he gets paid for. So it's not, this is my work and this is where I should be. And now here I am in family time, or I'm going on a walk or what have you, or I'm over here sipping margaritas and having total guilt about it. This is an activity that I need to sow into deeply. And this is an activity work that I need to sow into deeply as well. And I just happen to get paid for this one.
I love that.
It like changed my life.
So good. I'm going to go back and listen to that myself. So good. Shannon, this has been awesome. As I mentioned to you at the very beginning, like how I do interviews, I don't do interviews with like question one, question two. It's like you and I are going to be sitting down in your coffee shop, having coffee, chatting about all this. And I have no idea where it's going to go, but I know I want to talk about a lot of different things. And I think we brought a lot of value to everybody listening here. So thank you for sharing your brilliance and your expertise. Where can people connect with you? What are the best places or place or, you know, for them to reach out to you, let them know they heard you on the show here, get on your email list, check out your programs, whatever it might be.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you guys for listening. Instagram, let's just be honest, that's where I hang out all the time. So my handle is The Social Bungalow, the three words. And there's always something fun in the link in my bio, but please do just come DM me, say you heard me here, we could strike up a conversation. And I can always point you in the right direction, because I do on Instagram and in my Facebook group, I go live twice weekly to answer any question. It's called Coffee and Questions, obviously. And in that, I just go live for 30 minutes a day. And anything you bring to the table, I give you custom feedback on. So I'm not going to pivot the conversation into sales and the DMs. I'm just going to point you towards where I can support you. So please do just reach out.
Love it. I love it. Guys, I'll link everything up for Shannon in the show notes for the episode here today. Shannon, thank you so much again. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Rick. It's been awesome.
Hey, my friend, if you are a course creator or an online coach and you're already averaging at least 7 to 8K per month in revenue from your online business, and you're looking to scale, you want to be optimizing your business, growing your business towards maybe multiple 6 or even 7 figures, but you're hitting up a little bit against a roadblock here. You are overwhelmed. Maybe you're heading towards burnout, or maybe you're already there. You're not really sure what next steps that you should be taking in your business in order to scale that business. But here's the key: scale the business, grow the business without working longer and harder. Because remember, my friend, we are building a business around our life, not the other way around. And so if you'd like my help, my team's help, and the help of this other group of amazing online course creators and online coaches just like you, then I want to invite you to apply for my accelerator coaching program. This is one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a mastermind all wrapped up into one killer program. So if you want to learn more and apply, it's application only. Go to rickmulready.com/accelerator. All right, my friend, appreciate you as always. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Make sure you hit that subscribe button there in Apple Podcasts so that you don't miss any episodes I've got coming your way. And until the next episode, my friend, be well, and I will talk to you soon.
Do you want to avoid the 7 biggest mistakes that burn through course creators' ad money? I see these over and over and over again, and I put them together in a mini email series. This is not fluff. Each of the 7 mistakes, I also have a recorded video tutorial showing you inside of Facebook Ad Manager how to fix those mistakes. This is good, solid, and it will save you money or help you make more money with your Facebook ads. Click down in the show notes below. You'll see the link, and you can go download it right now for free.